Hello, Metro Augusta. Hello, Georgia, and hello, wherever you are. This is Janice Allen Jackson welcoming you to the January 17th edition of Local Matters, a show designed to make you a more confident voter and a more engaged citizen. Today's show is brought to you as a service of Janice Allen Jackson and Associates, where we proudly provide services to local government and nonprofit organizations. If you have not already, please follow the Local Matters Podcast of Georgia on Facebook. And of course, we also ask you to subscribe to the Local Matters Podcast of Georgia YouTube channel. When you follow and subscribe, you get notifications when we post our episodes, and there's other information that is made available on our Facebook page that helps us know that you support our efforts, as well as make sure that you have easy access to our episodes. Today, we are going to get back to the topic of homelessness. You may recall that a few months ago, we had Bethany Trapp, who works here in the Augusta area, talk about what it's like to work with homelessness from the perspective of a service provider. Today, we're actually going to talk to somebody who has lived through homelessness for multiple periods in her life. I will warn you in advance that some of the topics that we'll delve into are sensitive, so please be mindful of that. We felt like that is necessary to make sure that you have a full understanding or fuller understanding of some of the situations and consequences that lead to individuals becoming homeless, what they experience while they're homeless, and how to get out of homelessness. But before we get to that, we are going to remind you of our episode last week. Last week, our guest was Tanya Bonnetatibus, who is the Savannah Riverkeeper. She talked about water quality, air quality, and things that we need to know about how that impacts our community. If you missed that episode, you can go to our YouTube channel to catch it. Also, I want to remind you of a call for ministries that I issued at the end of 2023. I mentioned that I want to have some ministers or ministry leaders on Local Matters to talk about their efforts to meet human needs. We know that many of our churches and faith-based organizations have food pantries and clothes closets, but we also know that many of them are going beyond that. They're not just meeting those basic necessities, but getting into the human condition by providing life skills training, working with folks coming out of prison, et cetera, et cetera. So I am still looking for guests who can talk about those efforts. If you would like to be a guest on Local Matters, or you have someone that you want to suggest who could talk about their commitment to improving the human condition and why they feel like they are fulfilling the scriptural command to love that neighbor by doing so, please reach out to me via email. That is janiceallenjackson@gmail.com, or by Facebook Messenger, either to my personal account or to the Local Matters Podcast of Georgia account. Thanks so much for being a part of the Local Matters family. Local Matters family, we have a new member of the family joining us today, Shamiko Hayes.
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. You know, we're getting closer and closer to the holiday here, which means I'm probably getting lazier and lazier. But
it happens. Okay. It happens. It's the end. It's that end of the year kind of get that woosaw, that relax, so you can reset and get ready.
That's right. I have invited Ms. Hayes here today. You all know that sometimes I do shows with, you know, my citizen spotlight is what I call it, where we just talk to people who are in the community and we talk about their feelings about government services and whether they vote, how they decided to become a voter. And sometimes we talk about issues. You know, we've discussed foster care, we've discussed animal care, we've discussed homelessness. We've discussed various other types of services. clean energy and neighborhood revitalization and all of that. This time, we're going to combine the citizen piece with a major issue, not just in Metro Augusta, but throughout this country. We know a few months ago, I did a show on homelessness and the response of the government in the Augusta area to that. Right around that time, I had an opportunity to meet Shimiko, who has experienced homelessness personally. So I really wanted that to hit home with our listeners again, so you can understand the issue. So thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I know some of this is intensely personal for you. And I just appreciate you so much for being able to bring your real life story to our Local Matters family.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Okay. All right, you're very welcome. So before we get into that discussion, though, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself. I always ask our guests to talk a little bit about themselves so that our audience can better connect with who they are. So please tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay, well, my name is Shamiko Hay. And I would throw out for some of you that may know me, it was Shimiko Biles. My divorce was final yesterday. I have four children. I grew up in Augusta, Georgia slash North Charleston. So I like to jokingly call myself a salty peach. I went to Richmond Academy with the class of 2000. I went to Tubman Middle School. I am a member of Chosen. My pastor is Unique Mackey. Absolutely love it. I am a servant at heart. Just to let you know before we get started, I think I used to think that my story was difficult to tell, but I've recently, in the past few years, allowed God to use me and say, hey, my story isn't my story. My story is for others, others who've been where I've been, who may be going where I've been, for them to know that it's okay to not be okay sometimes. I am now a volunteer coordinator slash outreach director for Helping Hands out of Aiken, which is also amazing because they deal with teenagers who are going through temporary displacement due to things going on with them through DSS or JDD family issues. So this is full circle for me, being able to assist with these teenagers in a way that I didn't have somebody to assist with me when I was going through the things I went through. So I am very happy to be here with you this morning.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it's amazing how things just come full circle. So that's what I see happening with you is I'll just kind of come full circle. Having said that, and we have something in common. I didn't realize you were also a musketeer. I graduated a few years before you did, but yeah, nice to have a fellow musketeer on
That purple and gold, honey.
the perfect. Oh. You graduate. I mean, did you feel like you were on a pretty normal trajectory, having a pretty normal life at the time you graduated from high school, or was it always?
I ended up with my GED in 2003, dealing with everything I had going on with my mom, us going through homelessness with me growing up. I was pregnant with my first child. I had already missed an accessible amount of days my senior year. So when I finally spoke to my counselor, it was just too much. So I ended up dropping out. The end of first semester, I dropped out and I ended up getting my GED in 2003. I could have gotten it right when I dropped out, but at that time I have a baby coming. So I had to thrust myself into being an adult because I had a life that I was going to be responsible for. But everything did play a part in me not graduating and getting what I felt I should have gotten out of high school.
Well, you mentioned that it was actually homeless during the time you were growing up, which means that You've experienced at least two periods of homelessness?
Four.
Four. Okay.
Four.
Wow. Okay. So how did the how old were you the first time you found yourself without a roof over your head?
As far back as I can remember, my brain will take certain things and block it out for me just to keep me in a space. As far as I can remember, probably about 7 or 8, maybe. About 7 or 8. And you know, back in that time, I'm not saying I'm old, but back in the 80s, as a child, you don't realize that you're homeless because you're living with family. You don't realize that you're homeless because, you know, this is your aunt and your uncle and, you know, your mom's best friends and your little cousins or whatever. You know, you're thinking this is normal. But now as an adult, I know it wasn't normal. We were at that time temporarily displaced, for the most of my childhood. And I want to say possibly, probably more times than two times. I don't think I ever stayed at the same elementary school a year. I think I've been at different, I've been at a different school every year since first grade. I have no pictures of myself. The first time I saw myself was in a fifth grade picture. So I really have no recollection of elementary school at all, honestly. It's just a really big blur of me going through whatever phases we, you know, we kind of went through. But I do remember fifth grade, my teacher, Miss Gray. She made a great impact on me. I remember her. And that's probably about all I remember from elementary school is fifth grade. Other
Do you
than
remember
that,
what school you were at then?
I was at McCants Elementary in Columbia, South Carolina. McCants Elementary, Columbia, South Carolina. And that was probably the most stable that I had been at that time. My mom was married to my stepdad and he was wanted, so we moved a lot. And I didn't realize that's what was going on when
Okay.
things
Yeah,
were
you had no idea
happening.
that was what was going
No
on.
idea.
Okay.
No idea. So yeah.
Any siblings do you have?
I have two biological. I have two brothers. And I had three sisters. One of my sisters passed Christmas Eve 2 years ago.
Okay. So there were your mom, four of you, and your stepdad.
There was just me, my mom, and my stepdad. My brother was not born until I was 13. And
Oh,
then
okay.
I have another brother and two sisters on my dad's side. I didn't meet my dad until I was 13. So it was just me until I was 13. And then my mom had my brother.
Okay, got it. So, you have sort of a nomadic lifestyle. Basically, you're just kind of going from place to place, and you were staying with different relatives a lot of the time. Okay. And so the place wasn't your own. You were someplace, but it just wasn't y'all's place. Okay. And then at some point you become homeless yourself once you
I
set up your
did.
own household. Can you talk about what that was like? You, the kids, you know, what was going on there?
So I've always told myself that I would be different than my mom, but what I found out is that you can say what you want to be, but you know, when you're growing up, we're like computers. We soak in all of this information sometimes without even realizing we're soaking it in. And so one of the things, my mom is an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I said I would never be either. And I turned out that I was addicted to cocaine for almost 18 years. I started doing drugs when I was 18 and I did not stop until I was 36. I'm not going to say that played a full effect on me being homeless, but the things that I experienced with my mother definitely poured over into me being an adult. How I balance my money, being full of pride and not wanting to ask for help. My mother was what happens in our house stays in our house. So that's the mentality I had. Not reaching out for help, working two jobs to support my children, marrying a man because I needed love, but didn't realize the type of love I needed because I never got it. So all of these things played a part in what we went through. The first time we were homeless, and I've been married twice. My children's father was my middle school boyfriend. The first time we were homeless, again, I always worked. So when we couldn't make ends meet, I was exhausted. There was no help. My mom was adopted, so no help on my mom's side. I didn't really have a relationship with my dad. So there was really no family. When I say we lived with family, I realized later that family was my mom's best friends. So her best friends were my aunts, you know, her homeboys were my uncles, but all of these people were in the same cycle she was in and where I didn't want to go. So it was either live with my mom who's been abusing me all this time with my kids and I can't do that and won't do that to them, or go to the street. So we lived in our car for a little while. And when I would make enough money, we would be in a small hotel to try to pay it weekly and keep that going. And it was definitely a struggle. My kids were younger then. So to them, it was an adventure. They didn't really understand what was going on. I understood, but they didn't understand. It was like, okay, this is the same cycle that my mother was in. So to me, I was still learning about my faith, but I did realize that this was a generational curse that was just following us. And I didn't know how to work the system, who to ask for help for, any of those things at that time. So it was quite difficult. Quite difficult.
So tell me about your mental health as you're going through all of this.
I tell myself I am one tough cookie. I think a lot of the people that know me who haven't reached out when we were going through things didn't reach out because I've always been the strongest one. Growing up with my mom and abuse and different things, being molested, being raped, I had to develop a very strong mental kind of space in here. So my brain took over and it did what it needed to do. What I am learning now is at 42, my brain, my body, my heart, my spirit, everything. I'm in a place in my life now to where I'm secure in who I am and what I've been through. So I cry a lot. but it's good. It's a good cry. But I do cry a lot. I'm open about talking about where I've been. And that helps me. Prior to this, I was very controlling. I felt like because I didn't have control over situations growing up, I need to be in control now. I think that was probably one of the other reasons. You know, I ended up married twice because I was searching for things that I did not get. I was searching for a home. I've been moving with jobs and moving with places for so long. I didn't realize I was just searching for a permanent home because I've never had one. So, yeah.
Stability is definitely, I think sometimes the most successful people are the ones with the most stability because it just takes away a layer of things that you got to worry about. If you know where you're sleeping, you know there's going to be food on the table. know your mom, your dad going to be in the house that day. Those things allow you to think at a higher, think and move at a higher level
It does.
because of that stability. And you, of course, were afforded none of that from day one. And I don't want to go, if I get too personal here, you just let me know.
No,
You
you're fine. You are
mentioned being
fine.
assaulted. Was that by one of the, friends of your mother?
One of them was actually my cousin. It was a lot. Not really. I knew it was wrong, but I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know who to talk to about it. My mom was pretty much never home. So as a child, I knew it was wrong, but I also felt, I think, a sense of love, attention. And I think I needed it. I craved it. And so I accepted it. And as I got older, I realized that, I was a child and I was being taken advantage of. I was in a situation where there was no protection, there was no guidance, there was no security or any of those things. So I formed what I thought was protection, security, and love from the people I was around.
So did this go on over a period of time?
It did. My mom left me with my grandmother, who is now deceased, my stepdad's mom, and it went on for a while there. And then once we moved from there, it happened again a couple of years later when we moved to Columbia with one of my mom's best friends, who I called my uncle. And then I started hanging out at an early age again because I'm looking for attention. And then I was raped when I was 12, right before we moved to Augusta, Georgia.
All right. So you have survived sexual assault, multiple sexual assault, molestation, drug abuse, teenage pregnancy, homelessness, and now you're 42 and still standing.
Yes, ma'am. I
Okay.
am.
I didn't have this on my list of questions, but how is it that you're 42 and still standing, having survived?
I can't speak for others. I can only speak for me. And my God is real. When that word says he will work everything out for your good, it's real. Every situation I've been in, I've met the right people. Every time I've fallen as an adult, I've met the right people and been in the right places, even if I wasn't ready to go. God was telling me to go left and I'm going right, but he still lines me up to where I'll fall, but I'm not all the way on the ground. When I was 36, I'll tell you that's when everything kind of started changing for me. I've always worked, I've always took care of my children. Until I came out and told everybody I was on drugs for 18 years, nobody knew. I was very functional. Every job I got within 2, 3 months, I'm a manager. I'm running a store. It's just who I am. But when I was 36, I went to Chosen for the first time for a service. And I think for the first time in my life, I was convicted of being high. And one thing I've always done is even when I'm high, I talk to God. God, whenever you convict me of something I'm doing, then I know it's time for me to stop something. And he's probably convicted me before, but I wasn't listening. I went to church at Chosen one Saturday night, and I heard this beautiful angelic voice on the on the stage singing. And I have been doing praise and worship singing at my previous church before that. It's one of the things that keeps me. Music keeps me. And I went to church that night, and my body, my spirit, everything was so uncomfortable when I walked into that building. I had to immediately leave, Miss Janice. I couldn't even stay. The high in me was not comfortable with that pure worship spirit that was going on at that church. I immediately called my sister Camilla and told her what was going on, and I started going back to Chosen after that happened. 2 weeks later, I joined their praise team, and on the way going home that Thursday night, I heard God tell me plain as day, "Shamiko, throw your drugs out." That was December of the year I turned 36, and going down I-20, heading back to Washington Road, I threw out $200 worth of cocaine out my window. And I have not looked back. And I know that was kind of a crossroads for me. It was God saying, "Listen, I've kept you this long. Faith without works is dead. If you're wanting to keep going from this point and you want your life, you have to make a decision to want your life." And I made a decision that I'm no longer going to be angry with my mom, the people who've hurt me, my situations, or anything. And the only way to start is to start. And it was scary. I was in this box. We're so used to being comfortable in this box. We know what's inside this box. We know how to be homeless. We know how to live paycheck to paycheck. We know how to borrow. We know how to ask. But so many of us are scared to step out of that box and see what else is there? What else can you be? What else is out there for you? So I had to step out of that box. So at 36, I stepped out of that box, and I have not looked back.
That is an awesome testimony. It's an awesome testimony. So even the scripture you referenced was Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those who love the Lord and those who are called according to his purpose. So you believe with even all terms, all of the horrible things, abuse, sexual abuse, you think all of that was all coming together to get you to a better place.
Now I do. Now I do. I used to question it. I used to question God, why will you put me? Why am I in these situations? Why would you allow this? I believe now that I'm meant to heal a nation of women. I'm meant to speak. I'm meant to sing. I'm meant to do these things. It's what he placed me here for. And I've been running from it for a long time, and he's been placing me in the same place to lead women for a long time. I can think back to when I was 15, 16, 17, at Beulah Grove Baptist Church, and I've been in this place for a very long time. And I don't need a college degree to tell me this is what God has been telling me. You've lived this life. You have a full lifetime experience of things you can attest to, things you can talk about. I prayed a long time ago and asked God, one of my favorite songs, LL Cool J, Around the Way, Girl. I prayed a long time ago and said, "God, I don't even know if this is the right thing to pray, but you know that song LL Cool J, Around the Way? I need you to make me an Around the Way girl. When I am around other women, I need there to be a connection, something within me that they're dealing with. I need that to be able to break." so that I can reach whoever I need to reach. So that woman can reach one, and that woman can reach five, and that woman can reach 10. So at this point in my life, I am a 100% open book.
Okay. That is an awesome testimony. So you said something too that I want to pick up on. You're obviously in a congregation now. Sounds like you were in a congregation for a long time, going back to your days at Beulah Grove. Taking you to church. How did you get to church?
When I was a teenager, I went with my best friend, my children's godmother, Chantel. And that's how I would go at that point. My mom was a, when my grandmother died, her adopted mother, my mom would go to church for a little while on New Year's. We'd go on Easter, and that's pretty much about it. So I went during middle school and high school. I went to Beulah Grove with my best friend, Chantel. As an adult, I didn't start back going until I was around 23, 24 when I moved to Greenville. And I started back going, and I joined the praise team. And again, you know, praise and worship has always been my door, my portal to me keeping a relationship with God. I know scripture, and I can go to scripture when I need it. And if I don't know which one I'm looking for, I'll Google, give me a scripture on this. And so I learn it that way. But praise and worship, it has always been my foundation. So I'm very, very blessed and full of immense gratitude that God has blessed me with a voice to be able to use and sing and get through things. I've been singing since the first time I was molested. The first song I sung through being molested was Anita Baker. And I would hum her in my head the entire time this is going on. So I've been singing since I was about six.
So you also spoke to something that's really important to me, that should be to everybody, is that you had friends who were taking you to church in the middle of all this chaos that is happening in your life. That sounds like that some that friend who made sure that you went was a lifesaver to a large degree.
She, and I don't, if she listens to this podcast, this will probably be the first time that she ever hear me say this, but she was my lifesaver. She is the godmother to all of my children. She was front and center when I had my first child, front and center. But she came into my life at a time where it was just me and my mom, and I was used to what I was used to. So she kept me grounded without even realizing that she kept me grounded. Saved my life three times. I would have committed suicide three times. She saved my life three times without even knowing that she saved my life three times.
I'm glad you said that, because going through my head before you said that was me one friend away from suicide. Mm-hmm. So that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. So in the middle of the chaos, going to worship occasionally because of your friend, all these that, you know, many of us think would be the end of the world, you know, the teen pregnancy, the dropping out of high school, and then subsequently, how many total children do you have?
I have four. Okay. Yes.
All right. The first time you got married, you how?
I got married when I was 23.
Okay. All right. So young mom, then became a relatively young bride. And here you are now with a testimony and wanting to get out and speak to people and help other women. Tell me about some of the other people that helped you. And wait a minute, I want to ask that question, but no, before I ask that question, there's one more question. I have a friend from way, way back that used to always that drugs were for people who couldn't handle reality. Was that true for you?
No, ma'am. Really? I need people to understand that I don't think there is any way possible for you to categorize why people do drugs. I knew my reality. I handled my reality very well. For me, in all honesty, I just liked how the drugs made me feel. I liked how it made me feel. I liked the rush. I was in control of my reality. I worked everything well in my box, but I liked the rush. And I wanted to feel that rush, not get away from my reality. I wanted to feel. In my reality, there was no feeling. I had blocked everything for so long. Like I just wanted to feel. I could look in the mirror every day and tell me everything that was going on, understood it, prayed about it, wrote about it, and everything. I just wanted a rush. And then that rush turned into more of a rush and more of a rush and more of a rush. Doing cocaine, I think for different people, it does different things. If you're a violent person, it makes you violent. You know, whatever it is, it's a mental drug. For me, I worked 24/7. I had two jobs. So my body was exhausted. And this drug gave me what I needed, what I thought I needed to keep going so that me and my kids wouldn't be wanting for nothing. So that's what I did. But it never took me away from my reality.
All right. Thanks for clarifying that. I'm a drug user, but that was what she used to say. So thanks. It's the first time I actually asked somebody who has been a drug user what they thought about that. So
yeah, that was for me.
Now get to the topic of help. You know, you had the support from your friend. Were there agencies, nonprofit organizations, government organizations? Was there anybody out there that helped you through that homelessness?
As a teenager, no. So the first time I was homeless on my own, I was 17, pregnant with my son, which is when I dropped out of school. My mom had put me out. So I was sleeping on the third floor of my then boyfriend's apartment building at nighttime. And I would get up, you know, around 6 in the morning to sneak in his apartment when his mom left for work, get dressed for school and get on a school bus with him to go to Richmond. As an adult, the first time I went to go get help, I honestly felt unworthy. I felt degraded. I felt like I was being put at this podium and people were judging me based on the fact that I needed help. I didn't feel like a person. I felt more like, why am I even here asking you for help if you're going to make me feel like this? I don't think everybody is meant to be in a professional setting helping with people who have been temporarily displaced. Just because your degree says you can do that job does not mean that that's the job you should be doing. And that's how I felt. And this was with Cher in Greenville. It's almost like that thing where, you know, when a person quits a job, most of the time, 92% of the time, you're not quitting the company. You're quitting the manager or the coworkers you work with. So it wasn't Cher itself, but it was the people. And if you're not going to train your people in being compassionate and have an empathy for people who are going through what I went through on a consistent basis, sometimes sitting in on those interviews with your representatives who are representing you and your organization when talking to people like us, I believe we're always going to go through what we're going through. the first time I felt like a real person when was going through homelessness was in Augusta. The second time I was homeless was with my second husband. And we went through Family Promise in Augusta, Georgia. And that experience, I needed that experience. I needed to know that it was people out here that actually cared about what they were doing, and not, they weren't only trying to put me in a place and then shove me off. They wanted to get down to the root of what was going on and why I was now homeless again for the third time. I think that's, you know, that's needed. So yeah, that was the first time I felt like a real person, when I went through Family Promise.
Wow. Well, thank God for them, that you did feel like, you were treated with respect, which is so important. So, you worked with Family Promise. Was it help me? Did you, get more stable housing after you gave up the drugs, or did that before you gave up?
It was before I gave up the drugs. I've always had stable housing, but having a job that can supply for a family and pay your bills is a lot in our society. And so I never quite made enough to keep my bills paid and take care of my children. It was a struggle. It for years, it was a paycheck to paycheck struggle. I was always one paycheck away from, you know, losing my place. After I got off of the drugs, of course, there was more money available. I had to sit back one day and I looked at, you know, the different methods I would use to purchase drugs. And it tells you how much money you've spent. And I fell on my knees crying and praying to God and thanking him. Because the amount of money I spent on drugs that I could account for, I could have bought me a house, Janice. You know, so definitely in a different headspace mentally without the drugs. But if you go back to me being a child and a teenager, young adult, I was never taught how to budget money anyway. So now you couple that with me being a drug addict, and I'm out here just trying to figure things out. You know, I wasn't taught about credit or any of these things. So I was literally making up these rules as I went along, until I got in my late 30s. And that's when things kind of started changing for me a little bit. And then I'm still going to bring up Chosen. When I started at Chosen, my pastor is, he's such an amazing man. He will definitely hold you accountable. And me linking with my best friend, Camilla, at Gospel Water Branch is what led me to Chosen. And not until I got to Chosen when I was 36, 37, did I really start thinking about the direction of my life. And what things I have been doing and the cycle I have been in for so long, being on top to go back down, being on top to go back down, and really thinking about what my brain had been programmed to do. My brain was programmed on, we're only going to be good for a little while, then we're going to fail. So it's going to happen automatically. It just happens. When I started speaking differently about my life, I started doing different.
You know, I was thinking this episode, I thought we were going to talk about your experience being homeless, but that's really not the story. The homelessness is just a byproduct of all those other things that were going on in your life. And it seems like that maybe is the thing, but you helped me here. Is that the thing that our listeners should take away from this episode, is that there's a person behind the homelessness and there's a
most definitely, There is always a person behind the homelessness. One of the stigmatisms I've found that society believes is that if you're homeless, you're homeless because of most people think it's because you're a drug addict or you're not doing the things that you should be doing. But a lot of the times, if you're not looking at the person, you're not solving anything. What I want these organizations to understand is, unless you're looking at the person, unless you're going to dig deep and find out about the person, you're not going to end homelessness. And that's just a fact. We don't need organizations to throw us in a home and say, congratulations, you're in a home. We did our job. You know, let's go apply for another grant because we're putting them in homes. No, we need organizations that are going to set it up for, we're not only going to help you get into a home, you know, we're going to have therapists for you. We're going to have financial counselors for you. We're going to have whatever it is that you need that puts you in a position to be homeless. If you're not doing that, then 9 times out of 10, and I am living proof, that person will be homeless again in less than 2 years.
You need to serve the right services, mental health services, financial planning,
Yeah,
sort of stuff.
without those things, I don't believe we're going to tap into ending homelessness at all. Not at all. I'm a firm believer in order for us to end homelessness, we really have to find out why are we going through it? My testimony to these organizations is, you can put me in a home, but if you're not trying to figure out why I lost it in the first place, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be homeless again in 2 years. And that's what happened to me. I needed more than them just to put me in a home. If you're going to be an organization that's going to help with homelessness, you have to be able to help with everything else that's going on with the homelessness. We're not homeless because we can't pay the bills. We're homeless because of the things that we've been through that got us to the point to where we can't pay the bills.
So, did you ever? You never did drug treatment at all.
I did not.
You just cold turkey. You
I did.
just stopped, which is
I
in and of
did.
itself quite a story. But yeah, there's just so much going on there. It was yours was just by the grace of God that you just stopped.
I did.
But everybody does not have that story either. We only have a couple minutes left. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners to help them get a better understanding of this?
If I can tell anybody anything, I will tell you, number one, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to need help. It's okay to fail. That was one of my biggest things, I think, that led me back into being homeless, is that I wasn't okay with the failing. I would fail and not realize that, yo, Shamiko, you got back up. You know, be okay with not being okay. Be okay with knowing that sometimes you're going to fail. And be okay with letting people know you're not okay. Out of the 4 or 5 times I've been homeless as an adult, if I had reached out to the people that God did place in my life that I trusted and told them what was really going on instead of hiding it and trying to do it on my own, I don't believe I would have been homeless 3 of those times. I am right now living in an Airbnb, which is technically I'm temporarily homeless. Back in Augusta, Georgia, I got laid off from my job of 6 years back in February. I thought I was going to retire with that job. I opened up my mouth and did something completely different. And I told my pastor and my best friend at my church that I was not okay for the first time in my life. And
this is the most stable I've been, because I'm okay with being where I am right now. And God is moving and working even more. I think because I stepped out of the way and realized I'm not in control of absolutely nothing. Look at COVID. We're not even in control of the air that we breathe anymore, and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with reaching out to the village that God has placed around me. And I'm okay with saying where I still need help. If you can't admit where you still need help, most of the times these organizations aren't going to give you what you need because you're going in here with a mask on, asking for something when what you really need is something else. So if you're really ready to change, if you're ready for change, then you have to put your best foot forward and be ready for change. Say what you really need. It's time to take the mask off and say what you really need.
Thank you so much for sharing so many of the details of what you've been through your life. And I hope it lends better understanding to our listeners. I do want to point out, some of you may be, how did you even find Ms. Hay? And I said, yes, and I want to explain that story too, because at the time that we met, we were providing public service. I
Yes.
mean, we were serving on a panel through the CSRA Community Foundation. They give grants to area organizations that are doing good things. And we were actually on a grant panel together. We visited several agencies together and made some really tough decisions about who we thought needed the funding the most. And fortunately, two of the organizations that we recommended did get funding. So we appreciate that from the Community Foundation. Just wish there was more money out there. But also, what the point I was making was that with all of that, you're still willing to take your time and energy to try to make conditions better for others and provide some service. And you had a unique perspective on many of that we visited because you had actually seen them in action firsthand. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thanks for being a guest. You are now part of the Local Matters family. So we appreciate you doing
Thank
it.
you for having me, and thank you for doing what you're doing. It's needed. So often we don't really have avenues for us to learn about what's going on in the community and what really matters. We hear it from others' perspectives, but not from our perspective. And so it's definitely needed. And I thank you for having me on today.
You're very welcome. I close with my favorite Bible verse, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. This show is designed to contribute to each of those, giving you the power that comes with knowledge, demonstrating love for your local community, and offering you wisdom for decision making so that you possess a sound mind when it comes to these topics. Please tune in next Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. or Thursday at 7 p.m. here on 103.7 FM or 1600 AM. Or please go to SoundCloud, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts at any time, because local matters.